The ARZ File, the ultimate Cardinals podcast with Nate Lundy.
Welcome into the podcast. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. A lot on tap for the podcast this week as we kick things off. We'll get to our big interview in just a moment. Talk about the big storylines as training camp and the preseason are underway and the start of the regular season is just a couple of weeks away. Plus, we'll do Around the League with the coach, Brian Billick from NFL Network, as we will every week, a chance to visit with the coach. And we'll close things out this week's podcast with Overtime, a six pack of questions. This week's guest, Andrew Siciliano of the NFL Network and DirecTV's Red Zone channel. But it all gets started with the big interview next.
The big interview.
It is time for our big interview. Let's talk some Arizona Cardinals as we welcome in from CBS 5, Mark McClune. You find him on Twitter, at Mark McClune. Mark, let's start here. A great season last year for the Cardinals, and it seems like they are poised to repeat that kind of success as we go into 2016. How's the team handling the idea that there's a lot of expectations, there's a lot of weight on them?
Well, they've embraced the expectations. You walk over there, you walk in the locker room, everybody will tell you, hey, it's Super Bowl or bust this year. We have the window. We know Carson Palmer's back. We know Larry Fitzgerald's back. They had a fourth-ranked defense in the league last year. And I don't know if you've caught any of their television show on Amazon, All or Nothing, but they certainly put it out there that it's all about the Super Bowl ring. And they're not running from it, which is kind of fun because, you know, usually you ask people, hey, you know, what do you think about postseason, everything like that? They say it's one game at a time, but the Cardinals know this is the year in that championship window.
Well, it starts, as you just mentioned, Carson Palmer. You look at a quarterback who has had some injury history, things like that. Last year performed very well. Obviously, there's an expectation that that's going to continue for him. How's his health looked so far? Has Coach Arians maybe been cautious with his snaps during camp, anything like that?
No, you know, he's out there quite a bit. He looks like the same old Carson Palmer, and Arians actually made the comment earlier in training camp, he feels like he's getting younger with the way he's training. So, you know, when Carson Palmer signed 3 years ago, I asked him how long he wanted to play, and he said until he was 40. And, I mean, looked me right in the eye and told me that, and I believed him. But then it was a little interesting to hear the last couple of years around here. You know, he's so old. He's 36. But well, he's going to turn 36. But, you know, I mean, it's not like if his arm goes, his career would be over. But it's not like he's got to run the option or run any type of – do anything that Cam Newton does. He's got a great arm. He sits in the pocket. He knows the offense. I think he can play for a while. And, you know, he's gone out this year, and they've shored up the right side of his offensive line. They got Evan Mathis from the Denver Broncos, a world champ. And they let Bobby Massey go to Chicago to kind of run DJ Humphreys over there at right tackle, a guy who didn't even suit up last year, but was a first-round pick out of Florida. So, you know, between Mike Iupati and Jared Belbier on the left side, I think he might have a couple more clean pockets in 2016.
I think they've got one of the best wide receiving groups in the entire NFL, personally, when you look at Larry Fitzgerald, the other old man there on the offense with Carson Palmer, but you also see Floyd out there, you see John Brown out there. You know, how do you see the distribution amongst the three of those? Is it going to be somewhat equal? Are we going to see Fitz's numbers go down a little bit given his age? What would you anticipate out of those three?
Well, I think the ball just goes to the open guy. And actually, the interesting thing about, you know, Fitz had a career year last year, and he was blocking more. And Bruce Arians talked him into it. And I don't think that was really the plan late in Larry Fitzgerald's career. He'd always been kind of a numbers guy, just trying to be a speedster up the numbers or up the hash. But, you know, they bring in John Brown, who can fly, and J.J. Nelson, who can fly, and, you know, Michael Floyd, who is a former first-round pick. So they have a lot of weapons, and I think they just it's up to Bruce Arians to design plays and get everybody the ball. If they can protect Palmer, looks like they're going to have a really nice running game with David Johnson, who they say has Hall of Fame talent. There are a lot of weapons. We haven't really seen them get into a rhythm much in preseason, but I think they like what they have. They know what they have. And even, you know, I even think they could withstand a pretty significant injury on offense.
Let's switch over to the other side now from a defensive standpoint. Where's the strength? Where's the weakness?
You know, I think the strength is with the pass rush. They signed Chandler Jones, and they traded Jonathan Cooper for Chandler Jones with the Patriots and brought him in. and that they have another pass rusher. They have an elite pass rusher. And I think if Chandler Jones has the kind of year that he had in New England last year, sans the strange arrest story with the synthetic marijuana, I think, you know, he could end up getting some Von Miller type money. I mean, he's that impressive, at least has been in camp. And I think he had 12 and a half sacks last year. So he's a guy who can dominate off the edge. They also drafted Robert Kendici out of Ole Miss. He had some character issues. What we've seen so far out of him is he looks like a guy who's going to be a block of granite in the middle for the next, you know, 8 years for the Cardinals. Frosty Rucker's coming back. He's kind of an old man. He's been here for a while. You know, he can sure things up. They have a lot of depth on the defensive line. So I think that's their strength. And, you know, the defensive backfield, wait-and-see approach right there. You know, you have Patrick Peterson, who's an all-pro. But they lost Jerrod Powers and Rashad Johnson to free agency, and they brought in some guys. But they don't really have another corner to go opposite Peterson. So right now, Brandon Williams, who was drafted out of Texas A&M, Bruce Arians said it's his job to lose. He's been picked on a lot in the preseason, and, you know, mixed results there. You also have Justin Bethel, who started at the end of last year, and some mixed results there, including that 4th-and-20 for Green Bay out of their own end zone before the Hail Mary. So, I think that the defensive backfield's kind of a wait-and-see approach with Rashad and Jerrod gone. They don't really have guys there to line everybody up, so they're going to have to really get after the quarterback and make it easy on the defensive backfield the first couple games as they get into a rhythm.
We hear all the time how well liked Bruce Arians is, whether that's whether that's with his players, whether that's with his peers. What is it, Mark, about him that is that makes him so successful?
You know, he'll shoot you straight. He won't BA, won't BS you. I should make sure to say that. So, I don't know that he's been necessarily that great of a mood all at training camp. And then, we were over in San Diego. They had a joint practice with the Cardinals with the Chargers, in a very scary moment as the team walked out on the field in Qualcomm Stadium. It was announced Bruce Arians had to go to the hospital. It was a colon infection, diverticulitis. He was back at practice the next day. A little bit of a health scare there, but, you know, everybody kind of rallies around him. He's a leader. Everybody loves him. Even when he's yelling at you, he has that way of, everybody still loves him. So I think leadership's so important. And he's also an offensive genius, and he's been around the NFL for so long. He's seen everything. So, you know, he's kind of, the perfect head coach for what he calls, you know, no risk it, no biscuit offense with all the weapons they have. And it makes you kind of wonder why it took him so long to get a head coaching job.
Is their focus, Mark, entirely on, you know, making sure that they stay ahead of the Seahawks? We know that the Niners are down. We know that the Rams have just moved. They're going to probably wind up with a rookie quarterback. So do they view it basically as a two-horse race going into the season?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think when you talk about the Seahawks, you know, they've come in here the last 2 years and beaten the Cardinals in Glendale. Now, you could argue last year that the Cardinals already had everything kind of locked up, so maybe they didn't give them their best game. And the Cardinals actually went up there last year and won, despite two fumbles by Carson Palmer on Sunday Night Football. They turned around and, Seattle came back to take the lead, and Andre Ellington catches a little pass and takes to the house. And I think everybody remembers backup quarterback Drew Stanton's dance. So that was that was a lot of fun. We're seeing that on promos everywhere for the season. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think they know they can go into Seattle and beat the Seahawks. I think it's still pretty fresh in their minds when they're playing for the NFC West Championship 2 years ago. And Marshawn Lynch takes it to the house and cup checks himself as he dives in the end zone. So it's a huge rivalry. And I'm sure it's just like everything. It's like, okay, you know, they'll keep an eye on them all year. But I don't think that there is any sort of worry about them. I feel like they feel like they have a blueprint to beat Seattle.
Mark, as of the time we record this, we got a couple of preseason games left. We got a couple of weeks before the start of the regular season. Is there anything?
Get it here already.
I know.
Gracious. I'm so sick of.
Believe me, I'm in the same boat, man. Let's get to a 53-man roster and play. But that said, is there anything that you haven't seen yet out of this team that you're still waiting for? Or is it really, as we just said, let's get to the regular season and start playing?
Yeah, I mean, rhythm on offense. The first team offense has looked they've sputtered a little. You know, their first preseason game, they went right down the field and had to settle for a field goal through a screen pass. And, you know, you see the ability, you just haven't seen it click. So That's about it. You know, Dayone Buchanan, he's a safety who they moved to linebacker number 20, lit some guy up on the Chargers the other night, knocked his helmet off. So that was good to see. So I think it's just they're ready to play a game. They're ready to pick up where they left off. And I think what we need to see out of them is when they take the field against the Patriots on September the 11th on Sunday Night Football, and the first time something goes wrong, how they respond and how they pick themselves up. Because you know how things went in Carolina last year in the NFC Championship. It's still in their mind. That's what they need to get over.
Mark McClune, he's with CBS 5 down there in Phoenix and covering the Cardinals for us. You find him on Twitter, at Mark McClune. Mark, really appreciate you joining us on the podcast. Thanks.
Anytime.
Stick around. We got the coach, Brian Billick, coming up next.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the league, and as we will do each week throughout the season, we're joined from the NFL Network. You find him on Twitter at Coach Billick. It is the coach, Brian Billick. And first of all, Coach, how's your offseason been?
It's been great. As usual, too short, but it's time for football, so we'll crank this thing up.
It always feels like it's too short. Let's talk about some of the stories from the offseason and even from training camp and beyond. A few interesting quarterback moves, so let's start here. First of all, what's your assessment of the Broncos quarterback situation and the decision Gary Kubiak's having to make?
Well, anytime you take a quarterback in the first round, obviously L.A. doing it with Jared Goff and then Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, and then Paxton Lynch in Denver. At some point, you've got to know these guys are going to start. I mean, since the, Aaron Rodgers did it in 2005, and he's the poster child for those that say, okay, you shouldn't start a quarterback. Let him sit in and learn behind somebody else. Well, with all due respect, he sat in behind Brett Favre. That's a Hall of Famer. And Carson Wentz and Jared Goff and Paxton Lynch, they're not sitting behind Hall of Fame. In my opinion, they ought to play. And it sounds like Paxton Lynch, particularly with a team like Denver, that's going to pack a great defense. They anticipate running the ball well. Why would you not start him?
And then when you go from Denver, let's stay in the West. Let's go to the NFC West. What about what Chip Kelly is dealing with in San Francisco with Gabbert, with Kaepernick? It feels like it's a very odd situation that he's trying to decide who his quarterback for 2016 is going to be.
Yeah, you know, look, the old adage is if you have two or three quarterbacks, you have no quarterback. I mean, it should be very clear-cut. And he may have already decided. I think there's still an upside for Colin Kaepernick. We'll see how he fits in the Chip Kelly system. You'd think it would be fabulous. Blaine Gabbert, I think we've seen, is a backup, a good, solid backup in this league. I don't know that you're going to be a championship-caliber club. Colin Kaepernick still has a little of that upside. But the hard thing will be that this roster is not a great roster right now. It's not a great defense. You know, you hope that Carlos Hyde can stay healthy and run the ball. The receiving core, they have some potential there, but I don't know they have the absolute go-to guy, and that includes their tight ends. Vance McDonald is kind of pedestrian. So I think the group that he's going to be working with, along with the defense that's clearly having to rebuild, I think there's going to be some challenges for Chip in San Francisco.
What about a positive quarterback story, at least from what we've seen in the preseason so far, and that's Robert Griffin III in Cleveland. A lot of folks feel like maybe we're starting to see the RG3 that we saw at the very beginning in Washington.
Well, you hope so, because obviously this guy has a lot of talent. If he can stay healthy, and that's a big if, that's something obviously everybody's going to watch to see, because they keep saying, we're going to let Robert Griffin be Robert Griffin. Well, when Robert Griffin was Robert Griffin, when he was RG3, he got hurt. And so I'm looking for a guy that can he beat you from the pocket? Yeah, can he do the things outside? He's got potentially, and I'm hesitant to use that word because the old adage is in coaching, son, your potential is going to get me fired. But if there's some potential, it looks like Terrell Pryor has some upside in terms of the receiver. If indeed Josh Gordon can come back and be solid for them, if they can get that running game cranked up, then that's going to complement RG3 and give them a chance, obviously, to piece this thing together. And I don't think anybody expects them to be a playoff team, but they can be a good, solid, competitive team.
The buzz down in Dallas is, of course, all about Dak Prescott, and we know it's a limited sample size of preseason, but what were your thoughts on Prescott going into the draft, and are they coming to fruition?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Dak Prescott, this is different than the first-round conversation, which is good. Because for the Dallas Cowboys, obviously with Tony Romo, it's all about keeping Tony Romo healthy. But if you can get and reach down into the fourth round like they did for Dak Prescott. This is a talented guy. A lot of people will equate his game a little bit in terms of Russell Wilson. Now, that, you say that, and people go, oh, boy, well, this guy needs to be your starter. I'm just saying that he's a later draft choice that's showing some potential. I did see an interesting comment from him in talking about how he feels like he's ready for whatever the NFL's going to throw at him, whether it's a vanilla defense or, as he said, a rocky road defense. I think I'm ready. Well, let's hold on that. I prefer to have a rookie quarterback know just enough to be afraid, because I love the bravado, but the difference that he'll see in the regular season versus the preseason, notwithstanding Tony Romo staying healthy. But obviously for Dallas, they've got the best of both worlds. If indeed he can be a serviceable backup, get a young quarterback that they can develop, you couldn't ask for more than your backup quarter, in your backup quarter position.
The coach, Brian Billick, with us. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick, as we go around the league. Coach, let's talk about a couple of coaching changes. How do you think the young Adam Gase, and I always wind up feeling older when I see a head coach who's 30, but nonetheless, a young Adam Gase, how do you think he'll do in Miami?
Well, he's got it set up to do very well. I mean, he was brought in. He's the current quarterback whisperer. So he's going to come in, and Tannehill is going to be that next protege, and that next quarterback. Indeed, can he transform this guy who's had a solid beginning in his career? That's how it's going to be judged, because the expectations in Miami are very high in terms of what they think they can do. Obviously, in that division, it's all about, can you supplant New England? I don't know if they're good enough to do that. So the next question is, are they good enough to be a wild card team? And that's a tall order in the AFC.
What about Doug Peterson in Philadelphia? What's your assessment of Peterson?
Well, he certainly brings the right pedigree in terms of having been a former player, being a part of successful teams with Andy Reid. He's certainly in a familiar situation. Let's go back and remember that Doug Peterson was brought in to be the quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles in Andy Reid's first year in 1999 to basically hold down the spot until Donovan McNabb could eventually take it over, which he did middle to late season. Now, that was a 5-11 team. He now is sitting on a team where he's got a couple quarterbacks, more than a couple. Sam Bradford, obviously, they paid all that money to. They went out and moved up and used a lot of assets to go get Carson Wentz. But I was up at their training camp, early in training camp, and had a chance to visit with Coach Peterson. And he and Howie Roseman, the general manager, seemed wholly committed to Carson Wentz not playing this year. Now, I don't know that that's going to happen. As I said, since Aaron Rodgers took over or was drafted back in 2005, 29 quarterbacks have been taken in the first round, and only a handful have not played in the first year. Only four, to be exact: Aaron Rodgers, Jason Campbell, Grady Quinn, and Jake Locker. Now, that's not an impressive list outside of Rodgers. So those that want to make the camp, well, maybe you shouldn't play your quarterback in the first year, hasn't turned out real well. So we're going to find out if Doug Peterson wants to emulate what he did for the Philadelphia Eagles and just kind of be a placeholder until they can get Carson Wentz into the starting lineup.
As you look at the NFL over the course of the last year, certainly the last 8 or 9 months, Coach, we've seen, whether it's the Al Jazeera report, we've seen Deflategate, we've seen a number of things going on. Are we in jeopardy at all with the league of Roger Goodell, any of the decisions or anything that he's doing? Is it starting to hurt the image of the league when it comes to the fans?
Oh, I don't think so, particularly when we're talking, talking out of both sides of the mouth, when the media wants to say, well, is Roger Goodell too tough? Is he too authoritarian, as the players and the union will say? But by the same token, the NFL can't suffer these black eyes. He's got to get it under control. And that's really what it's going to come down to. We just saw the recent situation in the Olympics with Ryan Lochte, and how it's so often it's not the act itself, it's the cover-up or the lack of taking responsibility for it that is much, much more difficult. And that's what Roger Goodell and the league are trying to do, to make sure that these players understand there's going to be an accountability. There's a red line in the sand, and if you cross it, you're going to be held accountable for it.
The coach, Brian Billick, with us. Last one for you, Coach. Give me a team that is going to surprise us, and it could be a team that we think isn't going to be very good, who's going to be better than expected, or a team that has high expectations that's going to underachieve.
Wow. Well, let's go with the positive on that. And you know, when we talk about this and what I, the work I do for the NFL Network, we're at that time of year where everybody wants to talk about that same thing, about where, okay, what, who are the teams that are going to surprise us? And the criteria is, okay, let's begin with the teams that weren't in the playoffs last year.
Right.
Because obviously you got to see what the Carolina Panthers do. Washington Redskins, who I think are going to be pretty good. Can they get back in the playoffs? But a team that clearly needs to do well for their coach, but I think his position could be pretty good, is Jacksonville. Now, they need to be good because obviously Gus Bradley's only got 10 or 11 wins, 12 wins over the last 3 years. But you've got to love, at least in the preseason and certainly in the third year, Blake Bortles seems ready, along with, you know, that great receiving core with Allen Robinson and Allen Hurn. The tight end position is a solid one with Mercedes Lewis. Julius Thomas, who they brought in last year in free agency, could step up and have a big year for them. And obviously in the running game, getting Chris Ivory to go with DJ Yeldon. They're going to have some offensive weapons. And, of course, Gus Bradley went out and drafted a bunch of defensive guys who they're going to play. They don't have to be great defense, but they got to be better. This could be a team in the AFC South that really could be wide open that makes their way into the playoffs.
And they're benefited, Coach, aren't they, by the division that they're in? Sometimes the geography around you benefits you, that there isn't like a Patriots or a Carolina Panthers type team that they're trying to climb over either.
Yeah, and I regrettably, we always will start the season off and, okay, what coaches are on the hot seat? And well, that division's on the hot seat because every single one of those coaches, whether it be Chuck Pagano in Indianapolis, the expectations with a healthy Ryan Leaf, whether down on Mike Mularkey, all but a first year, you go, how can a first-year coach be on the hot seat? Well, let's remember what happened in Jacksonville, where he went 1 year and got fired. The expectations that Marcus Mariota is going to be better. And obviously down in Houston, they went out and spent the big money on a quarterback that the Denver Broncos said they didn't want to spend the money on, and Brock Osweiler. Brock Osweiler's got to come through for Billy O'Brien, or it could be, you know, could be a problem for him. So I think that whole division of coaches is on a hot.
I say it every single year. You're a smarter football fan if you spend some time with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. Coach, look forward to visiting with you again throughout the season. Thanks for the time.
Sounds great. It'll be fun.
Coming up next, it will be time for Overtime, a six-pack of questions, rapid-fire style, with the NFL Network's Andrew Siciliano. Overtime is next.
Overtime.
It is time for Overtime. That means we got a six-pack of questions, because what else do you do during overtime but make another trip to the bar and grab a six-pack so that you can enjoy it? This week, our guest in Overtime from the NFL Network is Andrew Siciliano. Andrew, how are you?
Nate, how are you?
I'm doing very well, my friend. You ready for a six-pack of questions here?
Are they alcohol-free?
Well, they are alcohol-free, just in case you've got to go in front of the camera here in a moment.
Good.
All right.
Double check. Go ahead.
Let's start here. Question number one. Which rookie quarterback is going to start first, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, or Paxton Lynch?
Paxton Lynch.
And why is that?
Jared Goff might be my other answer. I think, no doubt, Case Keenum is going to be the starting quarterback for the Rams out of the gate. They have two difficult division games right out of the gate, so you're not going to see Goff, I don't think, in September. Paxton Lynch, as of our taping, Nate, still has a shot, if he performs well in week three of the preseason, to get the starting job, as absurd as that sounded a couple of weeks ago. And I think Paxton Lynch very well could be the two behind Trevor Siemian. And Trevor Siemian, somewhat unproven. That would put Paxton Lynch in a great position.
All right. Question number two. Do you think Ezekiel Elliott is going to break Tony Dorsett's 1977 rookie rushing record for the Cowboys of 1,007 yards?
Yes.
In what week?
Well, you need to average 66 yards, roughly, I believe, or 65 or something like that, a week to get to 1,000. So do the math. I say he looks like a 1,200-yard back.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm with you on that one. All right, question number three. Do you think that Tom Brady's suspension is going to mean the end of the Patriots' run at the top of the AFC East?
Absolutely not. Call me except in December when they win the division.
All right, question number four. Will this intriguing Jacksonville Jaguars team, led by a defense they've been rebuilding, do you think they make the playoffs?
Ooh. I'm going to say no, but I'm going to say they make a run for it and look like a 9-7 team. I'm still not entirely sold, but I'm excited. When the schedule came out in April, I said Green Bay on the road week one at Jacksonville was your sneaky good game of September.
As you look at Cleveland, are we seeing the resurrection of Robert Griffin III?
Yes. The question is, how long will the life be once resurrected? He certainly looks good in the preseason. It is still the preseason. Pump your brakes, Dak Prescott fans. RG3 has proven he could play and win in this league. Can he do it as a drop-back passer? Can Hugh Jackson truly, truly give him sustained success? I don't know. I mean, the right side of it off, well, right tackle is an issue. They have some weapons offensively, but blocking and tackling still will be an issue, which doesn't always bode well for the quarterback. Don't be shocked if they are in the number one overall discussion next year. Maybe not at number one, but at least trying to trade up to get a certain quarterback from the ACC, who for the time being shall remain nameless because he's an underclassman.
Let me do a follow-up to question number five. Do you think RG3 ever makes it back to the Pro Bowl?
Well, Teddy Bridgewater made the Pro Bowl last year, and I like Teddy, but he only had like 14 touchdown passes. The way people drop out of the Pro Bowl, I'll never say never for anybody making the Pro Bowl.
All right, last question from our six-pack in overtime with NFL Network's Andrew Siciliano. Do you believe by this time next year we will be referring to the Las Vegas Raiders?
I would say, because it's Vegas and we're playing the odds, that it is slightly better than 50-50 that we will. However, never underestimate the likelihood of an iconic franchise staying home with a last-second deal.
I have said that I'd never want to see a city lose their team, but given that I'm in Denver with the AFC West, it could be kind of fun with the Raiders in Vegas. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Nate, a man of your fame and your needs, you know, I can't imagine that you need a Raiders game to hop on a $79 one-way flight to Vegas.
As long as you're going to meet me there. It's Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network, part of Overtime with our six-pack of questions for this week. Andrew, thanks.
Yes, sir.
And there you have it. That's how the Overtime works, a six-pack of questions for a different analyst each week, and it also wraps up our podcast for this week. Thanks for being a part of it. We'll talk to you soon.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.